Hello, Dolores. Welcome.
Thank you very much indeed.
Great to have you on. Sorry about the technical difficulties here. We're doing...
Don't worry. It's really bad weather here as well. It could indeed.
What
Ireland is like.
Well, first of all, Dolores Keane, it's an honour to have you on. In my introduction, I was saying, you know, when it comes to the recognisable singers and voices in Ireland, I would say there are two people that are known the world over. One would be Christy Moore and the other is Dolores Keane.
No, well, that's a lovely compliment. Thank you very much, Austin.
And I must say, I would have to put you down as having the richest, when it comes to the female singers in Ireland, you probably have the richest voice when it comes to the folk scene that has been not just this century, but last century as well.
No, well, thank you very much indeed. Thank you, and I hope your listeners feel the same way.
Oh, well, I know that there's listeners out there and they have a great love for you, Dolores.
No, that's great. Well, I have for them as well. It's been years since I've been to Canada.
Well,
and I'd love to go back and do some concerts sometime.
We'll see what we can do.
Yes,
in ages. So, Dolores, growing up, you started out way back. Music has been in the family, and you come from a long tradition with you were reared by your aunts, Rita and Sarah.
That's right, yes. And they were all musical in the house, and the instruments were there, the fiddle and accordion and flute and whistles and the whole lot, you know. And they used to be left back in the parlour. But if anyone, you know, they were never put away. The fiddle would be on the left on the table and the accordion would be left on the floor or whatever. And, you know, Christine and myself were down in Carra. That's my sister, Christina. And we'd be down in Carra. And I remember Chris trying out the fiddle one day and I think there was a rush for the door down in the kitchen. Put down that fiddle and don't take it up again till you can play it. She was knocking off and screeches out of it. So we decided that the fiddle wasn't good. But I took up the flute then and I started playing the whistle and flute and playing a bit on the accordion, you know.
And Dolores, what would have been highly unusual in a way about Carra was that your aunts were well renowned, were well known, and even to the extent that the BBC came down and recorded what would have been a bit of a documentary there.
Oh, they did, yeah. I mean, they used to come from all over the world to Carra, especially when they made the album, Gareth Brown, that started Carra Records with the Chieftains, with Paddy Maloney and the Chieftains. Back then, when the Chieftains were starting off and the record company was starting up, and, you know, it was new in Dublin that time, you know. It was a big thing, like, to have a recording studio. And so Gareth Brown, fair play to him, put some money into it. And I don't know, he used to go around to the Play Cures. And now that would be music festivals, we say.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have the equivalent of music festivals as you would in Canada. And I often played with some of them. But the music festivals or the Flag Cures, as we call them in Irish, they were a great meeting place. You'd meet people from all over Ireland, you know, and you'd hear different accents, you'd hear different songs, and of course, with the way that we used to learn the songs was just by ear. You know, I don't think, it was only later on, when I was with the Denon, we'll say, that I started learning songs from a page, from the sheet, you know.
Right.
Everything else was just picked up by ear, as were the tunes. So you'd come home then and you'd have tunes, we'd say, that you had from a flute player from Belfast or from Armagh. And, you know, the great thing about the music was as well, it doesn't have any barriers.
That's right.
It doesn't have religion, colour, creed. It doesn't matter what you are. It breaks through all of that, which is brilliant. You know, it's about the only thing that does and that can, and that it wouldn't matter what colour or creed you'd be when you come into Carra. That wasn't even mentioned, you know.
Dolores put...
You know, and it was... People felt very at ease then.
Right. Dolores, you know, put Carra in context. Carra is a house in a very sparsely populated area.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about somewhere in the middle of Dublin.
Oh, Lord, no. No, not at all. We're not far from the west coast. Galway City would be about 40 minutes, 45 minutes. And then the townlands, we said the towns, would be Tuam and Headford.
Right.
So we'd say Caerlestrand would kind of be equidistant from Tuam and Headford, those two towns, you know.
And
Tuam now being a bit bigger because it's a few factories there and that. But Headford would be more kind of a, you know, a country village.
Indeed.
You know, kind of big country village.
Now, the other thing about that being that, as you said, it's a townland. It's not even a town to that extent. So you had people coming, as you say, from all over the world, because your Aunt Sarah and Rita had achieved fame and for their the songs that they sang and how they sang. And this was
absolutely.
The culture, and this is the culture you grew up in.
That's right. And it's Rita and Sarah, even though that my mother and father were very musical as well, but it was the way in which they sang and the kind of songs that they sung as well.
Right.
Because a lot of there was a great English collector. He was a Professor Child. And the first time I went to England, to London, to work for the BBC with John Faulkner on a documentary, I saw this. There's a big folklore department in Cecil Sharp House in London, and you can go in there and you can look up all kinds of songs and singers, and if you had the name of the song or just a few lines or something, they'd be able to find it for you, you know. And all the old recordings and everything, they were all kept there. But there was this Professor Child who made a collection, a very intensive collection of we'd say British or English and Scottish folklore, and he cross-referenced all these songs and everything else. And there was one particular song that Rita and Sarah, God rest them, used to sing, and they used to call it Lord Donegal.
Right.
Now, in Professor Child's collection, he has it down as Lord Donegal.
Okay.
But the song that Rita and Sarah sang has never appeared on script.
Right.
And they've forgotten when they learned it or who they learned it from.
Right.
You know, it's incredible.
Indeed, indeed.
You know, and I mean, it's a long song. It's not like the songs you kind of pick up on the radio now with two lines in them.
Right.
I mean, this told the whole story, like.
Yeah.
If it's the whole story put into words.
Indeed.
The big long ballad.
Right.
And, you know, that's the way that the music was passed down. And, of course, the travelling people, the tinkers, as we call them.
Yeah.
And they got that name because they were tinsmiths.
That's right.
And they used to go around and mend the pots and all the rest of it. And they would bring songs and tunes with them.
Indeed.
Because they'd travelled the country.
Right.
You know. And so it was... It's a very interesting way of thinking about, well, you know, where did you get that tune, or where did you get that song, or when did you hear it, you know, and to hear Rita and Sarah trying to think where they got the songs, you know.
Indeed.
And that'd be like maybe 60 or 50 or 60 years before that they learned it.
I know. Dolores, we're going to have to go to a commercial break, and we're chatting with Dolores Keane. Dolores. Fascinating about the background. I know then that you came to the attention of Frankie Gavin and some of the other guys relating to Dedannan, and it raised certain concerns among the family there.
Well, there were, yeah. I mean, I'd known Frankie, again, met him at Flagg and all the rest of it, and we were young, and I think I joined Dedannan when I was 18 or, yeah, I suppose 18 or 19. And I was in Galway one night at a session, and Johnny Ringo McDonough, the Bowron player, the world-class ball-down player, I must say. He asked me, he said, we're getting a group together. And he said, we're having a few tunes inside. And it was Mrs. Cullen's Bear in Galway. And there was like a bear on the front, but then at the back, there was a big room and they used to have music there. So I went back and I was very impressed with what I heard. And they were lovely people and good crack and all this. And Alec Finn was there playing the bouzouki with Frankie. And I'd never, well, I'd heard of a bouzouki before, but not the way that Alec was playing it. So anyway, I was asked to sing a song, and of course I sang a traditional song with unaccompanied. But then when I joined the Denim, well, no, there was a bit of little bit of fracas, I suppose, at home when I joined. Why I was joining and what would the neighbours say of this young one going around the country travelling with four lads at my age. And there was a bit of a row, and that all blew over in time, as things do.
Right.
But anyway, nothing to do me until I joined the Denon. And it was, it gave me a new lease of life, you know.
Right.
Singing songs with that accompaniment and everything. And as well as that, the Denon used to play in E flat, where other musicians and groups would play in D. And playing in the D flat, it livened up the tunes, you know. It brought them, it kind of gave them a new sparkle again. And people around the country were going mad for us.
Right.
It was brilliant, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't think we had a care between us. But we managed to get to the gigs and do them and right. get paid for them,
right.
you know. But anyway, then we got a manager in Spittle.
Right.
And he's dead since, God rest him. And we were able to go to Dublin and places like that. And then we made the first album, and the Rambling Irishmen went to number one in the charts, and it stayed there for 3 or 4 weeks.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So that was a great outlet for me. It then I saw what the folk clubs were doing in Dublin and all the rest of it. And I suppose from then on, there was no stopping me.
And,
you know, when you get a bit of knowledge, then you start to delve in and get more and more. And, I mean, that's what brought me to places. I think I heard you mention in Prince Edward Island there.
Uh-huh.
I've been to Prince Edward Island a good few times.
Right.
And, it's a lovely place, PEI.
Yeah.
And
I know you've been out west in Calgary and...
Yeah.
You've been all over the place.
In fact, I think we hold the record, the ground record, from the drive, the distance between gigs. We were in Santa Monica.
Right.
Right, in Florida. And our next gig was in... Calgary, no, was in, it was in Canada anyway. And we had to come straight up the middle,
right.
the length of the States and into Canada.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And then we did the two festivals, the Winnipeg and Vancouver.
Right.
And we drove that as well. Fabulous. It was a great way to see the country, you know.
Now, Dolores, during this time, I know Joseph was born and you were still, you were involved in the music industry. And also, the challenges of living on the road started to take some of their toll.
Well, that was much later. I'd gone to London, I'd lived there for about 8 years and worked for the BBC on and off on different projects. Then John and I were together, and we were married in London, in a non-denominational church. And we came back to Ireland, and we settled in a house, small cottage, thatched cottage just up the road from Regent's Era. And we were very happy there, and then Joseph was born, and, I was still touring, so John was having to stay with Joseph, And then I left the Denon, and John and myself formed a band, and I was playing in that. And, you know, it was there was an awful lot happening. But I used to make it home, but then it happened that when John and myself were touring again, my sister Christina took over the rearing of Joseph, here now where I'm sitting at the moment, in Christina's house.
Right.
I got very busy then when I had my own band, and this was a bit later on, and Tara was born, and there was the split up with John and all that. But it was, you know, and I was drinking more than I should be, and, you know, just trying to suppress anxieties, and you know, that's what I was suffering from. It really was depression.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And, you know, what do? You, when you're a drinker, you drink more to try and solve it, you know.
Right.
But now, at the end of the hunt, anyway, I had to go and get help.
Right. Now, John as well, like, you had your life and the care that John needed. Like, when you were pregnant, it was recommended that things, and you were told that it would not be a good idea even to go ahead with the pregnancy.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, all that happened, and, I mean, thank God I've dealt with all that now, and I like to leave it where it is.
Right.
It's dealt with, and it's in the past, and thank God. Then I got cancer,
yeah.
And thank God I got the all clear from that the other day, you know. And I was in Hope House, which is a great place for anyone, from any kind of addiction.
Right.
Be it alcohol or gambling or, you know, whatever they do, drugs. Anything like that.
Right.
It's the place that really, really helped me and saved me, I think.
Now, one of the things when I was listening to some of the comments you made, and that when you were learning to your songs and when you were performing, you performed because you felt the song, and you got to a point in a way where you had lost that connection with your music, and you were going on stage just going out there and singing without having the passion that you and the
yes fact. yeah you have it all said there, Austin. I just lost the, because you know, one time, well, I thank God I had that back again. Not as though you'd hear me now today, because I've a cold, but I did. I lost the passion. I lost the love and the crack of going on stage. And at the end, I was only doing it because I had a manager, and he was organizing festivals here, and you're going to America for 3 weeks, and then you're coming back in a week off, and you're going to, you know, and there didn't seem to be any time for myself at all.
Right.
Or any time, we'll say, even to sit down and relax in a pub, maybe, and chat to someone, or, you know, tell someone your story, or have a bit more contact with my family. You know, I didn't leave any time for that. Well, it wasn't needed, but I felt I was being pushed. When the work was there, you just did it.
Yeah.
So I just burned myself out, basically.
Right.
You know, and once the heart and soul went out of the songs, that's when it became a job for me.
Right.
And when it became a job, it almost killed me.
Yeah.
Because I tried to keep up this job, because I didn't like going on stage. I'd be with musicians that I felt that didn't have any regard for me, really. And I have a fella say, one of the band members one night, "Oh, come on, John, come on, we'll go on and get this over with."
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that still stays with me when he said it like that.
Yeah.
"Come on and we'll get this over with." And I thought, hold on a minute. It's to get it over with and get the money in their pocket.
Yeah.
That's all they want. Yeah. And I'm no better. Yeah. And that really made an awful difference to me when he said that. And I said, that's what I'm doing. I'm treating my singing, and I wasn't brought up like this. And I'm not going to sing again until I sing right.
Right.
Until that has come back.
Yeah.
And thank God it has returned. And my sense of humor, everything has come back. Thanks be to God, as I say again. I'm the way that I was 30 years ago.
Right.
But I learned the lesson along the way.
I know. Now, Dolores, another thing I noticed that you said that if you are presented with a song on a song sheet and you try to remember it, the chances are you won't be able to retain it. But
no.
That if you hear a song and you fall in love with it and it reaches you, that you'll never forget it.
That's right. Yeah, it's there forever.
And that as a result of that, even though you've been presented with lovely songs by people, they've been presented to you without you hearing them, and you don't relate in the same way.
Well, not in the same way, but I am getting a bit better now over the years, because when you see the song written down, you say, well, if it doesn't, they might send it, and they'd say, well, this is a song that I've written, but I don't have music. You know, but you could. But John was brilliant at that.
Right.
He was brilliant. And we'd work together on a song if the lyrics were good. You know. And because John is a great songwriter himself. I mean, he wrote the Lion in the Cage, and that was at number one for weeks as well.
Indeed.
And Storm in My Heart, he wrote that song. And Save Me, Place in Your Heart. He was with Ewan McCall and Peggy Seeger in the days that they had the folk clubs in London,
right,
and different places, you know. And they were a big influence on John.
Right.
So he taught me a lot about, we'd say, harmonies and, you know, the way that he proceeded into writing the song. Although I still left it to the writers. I didn't ever delve into writing myself.
Right.
You know.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned John and Storm in My Heart, because I have that one lined up next, and we're going to we're going to give the listeners Storm in My Heart. Dolores.
Yes.
A Woman's Heart.
Oh, right.
Didn't that well, that was a, that's what, 22 or 23 years ago now.
God, it is. Yeah.
And it launched. It did so much for the female singers in Ireland.
It did. It did. It launched an awful lot. But Ireland really needed a boost at him.
Yeah.
You know, the venues like were kind of, they'd been closed down, and there were people going to America and to Canada and Australia, you know, to get work and, you know, like music jobs, like I'm saying.
Right.
And there were only like a handful around Ireland, and the big festivals had stopped, and, you know, so when Eleanor McAvoy wrote the song A Woman's Heart, and she recorded it with Mary Black on Mary Black's album, then I think it was either Joe O'Reilly or Paul O'Reilly that own Dara Records. They had an idea of putting so many singers together and calling it A Woman's Heart.
Right.
And to tour it around the country.
Yeah.
And again, no more than the time that I was with Dead Annan, it was just, I mean, it was like wildfire.
Yeah.
I mean, we used to go into halls and in places, down small boreings even, and to find halls that would be big enough to hold the crowds.
I know.
And sometimes they'd be up on stage with us, you know.
Yeah.
And we'd be trying to be standing, find a space in the middle of the crowd.
Right.
To stand and sing a song. You know. It was like that. But, sorry, that's Christina's doorbell. It's not a cock crowing. But But it really, it made an awful difference.
Right.
And then out of that, like in Celtic Women.
Yes.
And then the record companies started getting all the, you know, doing compilations and all this. I walked into a record shop in Limerick, oh, I don't know how many years ago now, probably 12, 15 years ago or something. Well, no, it must be about 10 years ago. And it sold kind of Irish things, you know, cards with shamrocks and that kind of thing. But it had a whole selection of CDs of Irish artists. And I started counting, and I think I was on at least 9 CDs that was on the rack.
Right.
Of, like, different tracks that have been taken, lifted off various records of mine.
Yeah.
And then the recordings of, there'd be one or two songs of mine, there'd be two songs of Mary Black, there'd be two of Maura O'Connell, and then you'd look at the next one. That'd be known then as the Celtic Women.
Yes.
And then there'd be another one beside it, A Woman's Voice, and then there'd be another, you know.
Right, right.
And there were so many of them.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
So the whole thing kind of started off again from there.
Right.
You know, and people started saying, oh, there was a big place in Castlebar, that started off.
Yeah.
The TF in the Traveller's Friend.
Right.
And it was a hotel.
Yeah.
But it had a big function room. And that was one of the venues, the main venues, we say, for Mayo, you
right,
know.
Right.
And then, of course, we had Leisureland in Galway and the town hall in Galway. You know, so the venues started to open up again and people started going out and going to different groups and all the rest of it again. Right. When the woman's heart started, and it was a great boost.
Right. Now, Dolores, that was from the heights when the female singers in Ireland were getting lots of coverage and everything else.
Yeah.
But your career then also went to the other extreme where you literally were penniless.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I didn't have... John and I had divorced at that time. And... I had a partner that I was with for 18 years and he left and small blame to him. You know, and I didn't really have a penny to my name.
Right.
I went for help and, you know, I didn't want to be a hindrance on the family. And, I went to the St. Vincent de Paul and they helped me out enormously.
Right.
And then I went to one of the I went to Coonwilla, first of all, near Limerick. And I got a good bit from it.
Right.
And kind of started to make plans and, pull myself together and that. But it didn't really, I was kind of doing what I was told.
Yeah.
I wasn't really feeling it inside.
Right.
So now, I was still kind of lying to myself.
Right.
And lying to other people. And it's a very dangerous thing to do when you start lying to yourself. And then you convince yourself, that you're able to do it. And then you're not able to do it.
Yeah.
And so many members of the family used to say, look, you need to get help. And I said, but there's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah, yeah.
And they couldn't understand how I couldn't feed myself. And I couldn't.
So, Dolores, let's talk about the cancer then.
Yeah.
You went and you suspected something, you went for tests.
I did, yeah. That was when I was in Hope House Well, it's near Castlebar, and I went to the doctor there. I was referred by their house doctor, Dr. Grimes, and then I went to see a specialist, and he sent me to the hospital the next day, for tests, and I had a scan. I said I didn't want the other the thing that they do, the other procedure, because I didn't feel that it worked. I thought the scan would be better. And he said, whatever you want, mm-hmm. you get.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the scan, and indeed the cancer was there. Now I'd lost an awful lot of weight.
Right.
An awful lot of weight. And like for as long as I can remember, I was 10 stone, you know.
Right.
And I was down to like 8, you know. And for kind of no apparent reason, and I started getting worried about that. And I didn't look well, I looked gaunt, and but people thought it was the drink, you know.
Right, right.
But it wasn't. It was the cancer, of course.
Right.
But I left Hope House, and I had the procedure on my left breast in Galway, the regional hotel and hotel is a hospital in Galway, and it was very successful.
Right.
And so now, within the next week, the week coming, I'm going back down to Hope House because I have to finish the course that I was doing. I couldn't get, because of the cancer, I didn't get to finish the course.
Right.
So I'm going down now next week, with the help of God, and I'll finish the course, and then I'm starting a tour at my first date in the Olympia in Dublin.
That's right, that's at the end of the month, isn't it?
You'll have to get out your rosary beads that night and go down your knees and pray. And anyone that's listening in, do the same thing.
I
because I'll be in the Jitters in Dublin.
I know.
And that's the 27th.
That's the 27th. And all I can say is I wish I could be there.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. But you got the all clear then in February.
I did indeed. Then the RT did a documentary.
Indeed.
And it was very good. And I was delighted that they did it because I was facing all the facts with the man, the producer.
Right.
And he was the best medicine, I think, that I've had. You know,
right.
he just had such a way about him. You know, he was better probably than any of the counselors in Hope House. And they probably own up to that as well. Because it was so easy to talk to him. And the way he used to, it wasn't like an interview. You know, he'd let me talk away and then I'd have a habit of wandering off and he'd bring me back again and to get to the answer, you know,
right.
that I was looking for. And he said, we'll come down now, maybe Tuesday and Wednesday, and if you feel up to it, we'll do a bit of recording. And if you don't, we can go out and we can get some shots, aerial shots or whatever shots.
Right.
You know, and it, the way that he handled the whole thing made it so much easier for me, you know. And he made a great program. And I said that myself. And I was proud of it.
And,
I'm proud of it.
Dolores, as we're speaking, I'm putting the link on my Facebook page.
Yes.
For that, and it's called A Storm in the Heart.
Yeah.
And if you head on to the Gaelic Horror Facebook page, I'm just putting the link in there at the moment. And Dolores, as you say, you have the concert coming up at the end of the month. One of the things, we're at the point where we're about to wrap up.
Okay.
And we're going to actually leave the listeners with Caledonia.
Right.
And I want to thank you for taking the time. And I know you and I will chat. And hopefully, I look forward and hope we can have you come across to Canada at some stage in 2015.
Well, I would love it. I would absolutely love it.
And it's been an honour and a pleasure being able to chat with you.
Oh, well, the same as that. And thanks to the listeners. And I give all my best to anyone that's listening, of course, from County Galway or Mayo. We're having a big day here today. I have to go over now and officially open it. It's to do with all the vintage cars.
Right.
And it's been held over in Castle Hackett, which was a big estate, and it's where I was born.
Right.
At the butt of Knockmare. and it's a well-known hill. General Bernard, the man that owned the land, all the land round here, he's buried at the top.
Right.
And my father buried him there.
Right.
And he wanted to be buried standing up. And he was 6'2".
Right.
So he's up there, and the next time, please God, that you come and visit, I'll have to take you there.
Indeed.
And the house that we were all born in, this generation, my generation begins, it's a church. It was a church. And it's at the foot of the hill.
Right.
And that's where we were all born.
Fantastic. Well, Dolores, we're going to have to let you go there, and I want to thank you.
All right, love. Okay.
God bless.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.